And I want to welcome all of our visitors with us today. Appreciate you being here. And again, I just can't help but thanking God for Derek being back with us and the success of his training. And it's great to see you, brother. We're in the middle of a study called Encounters with Jesus. And this morning in our lesson, if I can get this thing to work this morning we're going to be talking about the lame man at the pool, John chapter 5. Before we get into our lesson, though, let me remind you, 5 o'clock this afternoon, right here in the auditorium, we'll be seeing this movie, Standing Firm. So I want to encourage you to come back and just share a time of fellowship and be able to enjoy this movie together, and we will have popcorn. So just come back and just spend some time together enjoying this time of fellowship with us. In this study, we began a few weeks ago, we're looking at different people that Jesus had encounters with, people that in one way or another were broken people, people that had broken lives in one aspect or another. So what we're talking about in this, and what we've been looking at, is the fact that Jesus isn't bothered by broken people. Jesus came to help and fix broken people. It doesn't matter what brokenness someone has in their life. God can fix that brokenness. That's what he is all about, you say. He specializes in fixing broken people. And by the way, I've mentioned this before, but he qualifies as an expert in that, okay? All right, he's an expert in fixing broken people because that's what he does. And it's also a realization that all of us, at one time or another in our lives, are broken people. We all need Jesus in our lives. We need him to fix our brokenness initially, our brokenness in sin, and we need him to continue to fix our lives. I don't know about you, but I know for myself that I am a continual work in progress. Okay? I'm broken a lot, and I need Jesus to continue to work on fixing me. Okay? Now, because he specializes in that, he sees the worth and the value of every single one of us, of all broken people. And he knows that every single one is worth fixing. Why? Because we are his creation. He made us. Okay? And so we're valuable to him. Valuable enough that he wants to fix whatever brokenness we have in our lives. But here's the most important aspect of all of this that all of us have to remember. We've got to allow him to fix us. As I've said before, Jesus is a gentleman. He will not force his way into anyone's life. We have got to invite him in and allow him to fix the brokenness within us. Okay? So, as we continue on this morning talking about Jesus fixing broken lives, we're going to talk about a pity party. Okay? Raise your hand if you have ever been to a pity party. Okay, now lots of you have been to one. Okay, keep your hand up, okay, if you have ever thrown a pity party. Okay, yeah, everybody's hand should be up just about, okay? I know there's always the exceptions, but probably most of us, if not all of us, have. I've thrown a few good ones in my life, okay? I don't know about you. And I invited lots of people to them. Okay, some people came and some didn't. But I have thrown some really good pity parties in my day. And that's what this lesson really is all about. Because you see, the reality is all of us are susceptible to the addicting drug of self-pity. Okay? It feels good when we're getting pity from other people. All right? Usually what happens is we face adversity, times of adversity in our lives, where we're just struggling with whatever is being thrown at us. And I don't know about you, but sometimes, you know, in my life, I've kind of felt like this guy. You know, I've got this little umbrella, and I've got, you know, storms coming directly at me, and I don't know what to do with them all. Any of you ever felt that way? Oh, yeah. But the one thing that typically we do is we let everybody else know about what's going on, you see, so that everybody can go, oh, I feel so sorry for you. And thus begins the pity party. Whatever the adversity that we face within our lives, the treatment is typically the same, okay? And we do. We all, everybody faces some kind of adversity from time to time, right? Anybody not faced any adversity? I don't see anybody's hands up. Okay, so we all know what that's about, right? We face that, and the treatment typically is the same for the adversity that we face in our lives. We get a whole bunch of well-meaning people that surround us, and they give us lots of love and lots of attention and lots of hugs and all of those kind of things, which is, you know, good for us, right? Okay, everybody's head should be going like this. It's good for us to get that kind of encouragement. That's why the Bible tells us to encourage one another daily, okay? And there's so many passages that talk about us giving each other encouragement. We are to rejoice with those who rejoice and to weep with those who weep. You see? So we're supposed to do that. We find that encouragement. And most of the time, when we're getting that encouragement and that kind of lifting up, when we're facing adversity, it works. Okay? It's a good thing that God gave us to be able to help us in those times of adversity and trials and tribulations. We find that encouragement, we're able then to move on with life, okay? Because that's how the healing takes place in our lives when we're faced with adversity and trials and tribulations and problems, right? Now, but here's the problem, okay? Sometimes what we find ourselves doing, if we're not careful, is we can be doing more harm than good. Okay? The treatment sometimes that people receive, it feels so good that we just keep coming back for more. Okay? And as long as I can keep, you know, the pity party going, the longer I can get people to keep giving me all this good feeling treatment, right? And it's easy to get addicted to that. It's easy to kind of get locked into that we want everybody to focus on us and our problems and give us all, you know, this love and encouragement. And that's kind of what keeps us going. And that ends up causing more problems than it helps. Okay? We get addicted to that kindness and that warmth and that love. And then what ends up happening is we don't really want to have to face the issues anymore. And it's kind of like this guy where we just kind of bury our head in the sand. We don't want to face them. We don't want to deal with them. And then the ultimate problem is that we become pity junkies, where we live on and thrive on and need to have all that constant attention and focus on us and our problems from other people. So we have to ask ourselves that question. Are you helping someone? We got to be careful about this. Are you really helping someone, or are you helping to fuel the addiction that they may have? You see, when people are kind of in this mode where they're blaming everybody else for their problems and not accepting responsibility on themselves, that could be a key indicator that maybe something needs to be done differently. And that's what Jesus does in this story in John chapter 5, the healing of the man at the pool of Bethesda. This encounter with Jesus is really all about canceling a pity party. Okay? So let's take a look at what's going on here. Let's go to the pool of Bethesda. And by the way, the word for Bethesda means house of mercy. And so just kind of try to picture this in your mind's eye, if you would, what's going on there. John gives us this description in the first three verses of chapter 5. Look at what he says as Jesus went up to this house, to this feast of the Jews, rather. And it says, verse 2, now there is in Jerusalem, near the sheep gate, a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. So five porches, just kind of think of that. And they're all covered, and they've got these columns all around, and there's a pool there in the center of it all. And look at what he says in verse 3, or how he describes the atmosphere of what's going on there, okay? Here, a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, and the paralyzed. So So just again, try to picture in your mind's eye what's going on in this scene. You have people that are sick. You have people that are laying, probably some who are paralyzed. They're all laying around there. Bodies just scattered all around this pool. Okay? There's probably a lot of moaning and groaning, and it probably doesn't smell very good. Okay? Because people back then, they didn't have all the hospital sanitization processes and everything. You're sick and you're lying there, you can't take care of yourself, you're just there. And for a lot of those folks, someone would bring them at the beginning of the day, they would bring them and set them on their mat, and then they would go on about their business to their work, what have you, and at the end of the day, they would come back and pick them up and take them home. And others were not quite as fortunate as to have someone help them out that way. Many of them perhaps stayed there a lot. They didn't have nurses that went around caring for them and emptying bedpans and all of those kinds of things. Just kind of picture and imagine what this scene must have been like. And so the fact that Jesus was there at this place, where all these people were, is very noteworthy. Why? Because Jesus was where hurting people were. You wanted to find Jesus, look for hurting people. Okay? That's where Jesus hung out. I don't know of too many stories in the Bible at all, in the gospel accounts, other than when we hear of Jesus being at the synagogue, where Jesus was out mingling around with the rich and famous and the religious leaders and so forth. Usually when we hear about it being with them, they were in some kind of a confrontation, weren't they? And oftentimes it was after Jesus had healed someone who was hurting of something, and even sometimes on the Sabbath. You see, Jesus was where hurting people were. And that's why he was there at the pool of Bethesda in this particular day. Now, about the man in this story, we usually typically assume that he was paralyzed. But I'm going to suggest to you this morning that that's not the case. And the reason is because there are two Greek words that are really important here to understand. The first word in the Greek language that we're looking at here, asthenia, that word basically speaks of an infirmity, okay? It is a want of strength. It is a weakness that someone has in their body, usually translated invalid or infirmity. There's another Greek word, okay, paralytikos, and that word literally means paralyzed or paralysis. It's the word that is used, for example, in Matthew chapter 9, in the story of the paralytic that is healed by Jesus, the one who was let down through the roof by his friends. That's, by the way, here's a plug-in for this, okay? That's one of the stories we're going to be talking about in Vacation Bible School this summer. Okay? But that's the word that is used to describe this man. He was a paralytic. In John's account of this man, the word asthenia is used. He was infirm or sick in some way. Right? For 38 years, this man had been infirm. Than an invalid. 38 years is a long time, would you agree, to struggle with some kind of infirmity, some kind of sickness. And so this man, in his life on a daily basis, lived on the corner of discouraged and hopeless. I'd suggest to you that was his residence. 38 years of suffering in that way most likely left him feeling very discouraged and hopeless in his life, that his situation was ever going to change. And then Jesus comes along. And he asks a very important question. What do you really want? Okay. What do you really want? That is a penetrating question. Jesus asked the question this way: do you want to get well? Want has everything to do with it, doesn't it? Okay? What do you really want? Do you really want to get well? Okay? Now, on the surface, we would look at that and say, well, that's a pretty dumb question, isn't it? Why would Jesus ask someone who'd been an invalid for 38 years, and he knew he had the power to heal him, why would he ask him, do you want to get well? But I'd suggest to you that it was exactly the right question to ask. Okay? It was the perfect question to ask, because it goes back to the whole issue of what our want really is. What do you really want to do? You see, desire has an awful lot to do with our ability to do something, doesn't it? To do anything, especially, I think, to get physically well. A lot of times when people are sick or injured in a very severe way, doctors will even say, we've done everything we can, the rest depends upon their desire to live. So we know that desire has a lot to do with what we're able to do and to overcome and so forth. In fact, somebody said it this way, your desire to change must be greater than your desire to stay the same. It's got to be greater. Okay? Do you want to get well? The man's response reveals his true condition. All right? And look at, notice what it is that he says to Jesus. Okay? He basically, what he does is he throws out the victim card. Okay? Throws out the victim card in his response. Jesus says, do you want to get well? And immediately he throws out the victim card and starts blaming everybody else for his condition. You see, John indicates to us that there was a belief by people that that from time to time an angel would come and stir the waters in the pool, and whoever was the first one to get into the water after it had been stirred, they would be healed of whatever infirmity they had. And so this man is basically saying, it's not my fault that I'm in this condition and been here this long. Every time the water is stirred, somebody else gets in there before I will, because nobody will help me. And Jesus responds to the man by saying, get up, pick up your mat, and walk. He challenged this man to begin taking responsibility for himself. Now you might think, man, this is kind of cruel, Jesus, isn't it? I mean, the man's been lame. He's been infirm somehow for 38 years. Jesus, give him a break, right? You're going to see in just a few minutes why Jesus took this approach with him. Okay? But here's the challenge. Start accepting responsibility for yourself. And it kind of goes back to that whole idea of the pity party. And so it's kind of like this. I invited God to my pity party, but he didn't even RSVP. How many times have you done that? I have. I didn't hear from him. He didn't come. Okay. That's because God believes in tough love. Why? Because he knows that tough love is what allows us to break free of that victim mentality. That mentality that tells us it's not my fault, it's everybody else's fault. And that mentality that keeps us from accepting responsibility for our own situation sometimes. Now, keep in mind, we're not talking about every situation. This is one person that Jesus encountered that we're focusing on this morning. But, you know, that's why I had you raise your hand earlier. You know, we've all done pity parties. this is something we all need to face. We all need to understand the message from Jesus. You see, there's a response that is demanded of this man by Jesus. And there's really three different responses that the man could choose. All right? The first thing is that he could continue making more excuses. But you don't understand, Jesus. You don't understand how it is here. Everybody's pushing and shoving, and I can't really go very fast. And he could continue doing that. Or he could possibly have gotten angry with Jesus. Okay? The world was wrong with my clicker today. Okay? Could have gotten angry with Jesus. Or he could have obeyed and been healed. Those are his choices. And someone said this at the bottom of the screen there, when no one is joining in on your pity party, maybe it's time you left too. See? Maybe it's time to shut the party down and go on about your business. And that's part of the message, I think, that Jesus is trying to get this man to understand, and he's trying to get you and I to understand that also. It's what I'm referring to as a confrontational cure. Okay? What is that really all about? Well, you know, we play the victim card. It's not my fault. If so-and-so hadn't have done this, if so-and-so would only do this, if they'd stop doing this, then I'd be able to do what I'm supposed to be. How many times have you ever heard yourself saying that? You know, when you're involved, especially in sin in your life. Okay, watch your toes, folks. Okay? And you know that you're not supposed to go there. And the excuses start coming out. Well, if so-and-so would start doing this, if they wouldn't treat me this way, then I'd do that. There's nothing that I find in the Bible whatsoever for any of us to be able to get out of our responsibility toward God and doing what He calls upon us to do because someone else isn't doing what they're supposed to do. Are you hearing me? It's just not there as much as sometimes I would like it to be. In verse 14 of this, Jesus indicates that this victim mentality is sinful. Look at what he says in verse 14. See, you are well, now stop sinning, or something worse may happen to you. What could be worse than being an invalid for 38 years? And yet that's what Jesus challenges this man with. He's saying, look, you're sinning in your life. Well, how could a man who's an invalid be sinning? Oh, lots of ways. Lots of ways. Just be honest with yourself. I know I've been infirmed, not necessarily physically, but emotionally been infirmed and struggling with stuff. And in the midst of that infirmity, I've seen. How about you? See? And that's where Jesus causes us to focus. And he says, look, you need to focus on the sin in your life, and you need to stop it. And this blaming everybody else for your things and the things you're responsible for is not going to get you where you need to be. So stop doing it. It's kind of like he's saying this. If you keep on blaming everyone else, not accepting responsibility for yourself, you'll end up crippling your soul and shutting God out of your life. And you know what? Being crippled for 38 years is bad, but being separated from God for eternity is much worse. So, playing the blame game, get over it and move forward, is the message Jesus would say. I hear him say that to me. You see, one thing we've got to keep in mind is that God is not moved by our pity. Okay? He's moved by faith. He calls upon us to be people of faith. That requires us to accept responsibility for ourselves, for our actions, for our behavior, for the sin in our lives. Because only when we do that can that stuff be overcome in our lives. Just like with this man. So the question then is, for all of us, whatever those of you who might be struggling right now, might be throwing a pity party, do you want to get well? Do you want to get well? There's no question, I don't think, in any of our minds whether or not Jesus can fix that kind of brokenness in our lives. The issue again goes back to what we've said before. We've got to allow Him to do so. So, the invitation is extended this morning, primarily for those of us who may be struggling with throwing a pity party right now in your life. Maybe there's stuff going on in your life that you're just all upset about and all in turmoil about. And maybe the real answer to that is that you've got to start focusing on accepting responsibility for it. And I know that's tough to do. But that's where Jesus comes in and helps us to do that. So the encouragement is for, if that's where you are, maybe you've been, you know, throwing a really huge pity party about something in your life that's not going the way that you think it should be or want it to be or whatever, it is time to end that party and move forward. And Jesus wants to help you do that. Jesus challenges you to pick up your mat. Maybe someone here this morning that has not given your life to Christ yet. You've not given your life to Christ. You've not been baptized to wash your sins away. You're still separated from God by your sins, and you are lost. And you will be lost for eternity unless and until you make that decision to give your life to Christ and have your sins washed away in the waters of baptism. And you can do that right now. If you believe that Jesus is the Son of God and you're ready to make a commitment to make Him Lord of your life, then call upon Jesus as Lord. Repent of the sin that is separating you from God and have those sins washed away in the waters of baptism. And you can do that right now, this month. You don't have to wait. We can't help you if we don't know what's going on. So we offer this time of invitation for anyone to come. Dale will be in the back to receive anyone. If you'd like to have a private prayer, a conversation with him, and I'll be right up front here to receive anyone if you'd like to come up here. Let's stand together.